Oh, I'm fine. I'm absolutely terrified because while we are speaking, the film is screening, you know, in the big theater, you know, and I'm terrified with the reaction of the audience. So I escaped, you know, from the theater. I'm with you, delighted to meet you, you know, and I'm wondering what will they think at the end of the movie. I just hope that they will like it.
But you already had a screening at Toronto, didn't you?
Yeah, but I didn't attend to the screening neither. You know, I never see my films.
Why, you never see them?
Never, never. You know, because when, you know, it would be pointless for me because I can't improve them any longer. Each time that I can improve the film during the color grading, the mix, etc., I'm there, you know, working hard. You know, I saw the film so many times in the editing room, you know, but when the film is finished, when I can't improve it, I have to let it go. And now it belongs to the audience. It doesn't belong to me any longer. The audience and the critics do know what the film is. You know, I have no knowledge about it any longer. It's their film. It's not my film any longer.
Do you listen to it since your new film has a lot of music?
Yeah, I'm behind the door listening and trying to catch the reaction of the audience, but I'm not allowed, you know, I don't allow myself to look at the film. You know?
The film is called literally Two Pianos. What does music mean for you?
First of all, you know, the story, the basic, the beginning of the story is the story of this pianist who spent such a long time on the other side of the world in Japan, you know, abroad, you know, and he's coming back in his hometown to play concertos for two pianos with his mentor, who is played, you know, so François Civil is playing the part of Mathias, who is coming back in his hometown, you know, and he will meet Charlotte Rampling, who was his mentor, and will conduct him, you know, with concertos with two pianos. So the title was very simple, with two pianos, you know, because they are playing the concertos with two pianos. But on the other hand, you know, at one point, one of the characters will die and the film split in two parts. You have one part, you know, which I could call a mystery movie, and the second part of it being a melodrama. And the melodrama is full of ghosts, the ghost of the mystery story. So two pianos because you have two parts in the film. You know, that's what I had in mind.
We also have, as you said, a mystery with doubles.
Yeah.
And the past is coming back. Feels very Hitchcockian. Would you say that this is an inspiration or what did inspire you?
Oh, Hitchcock is always an inspiration. You know, he's the one of the masters. He's not the only master, you know, but he's one of the big masters. And he directed the film, the most famous film with two parts, you know, which is Vertigo. You know, Vertigo, you have one section, half of the movie is about this woman and now she dies in an accident. And after that, you have the second part. Actually, the two women are the same, you know, it's Kim Novak and that's Vertigo, you know. So yeah, sure, it was an influence on our work.
How did you decide to make music the center of your new film? Or would you say that music is just something in the background?
I wouldn't say that it's in the background, you know, because some of the scenes bring some suspense with the music. You know, when Mathias arrives, you know, totally drunk during a concerto and can't play, and you are, and all the audience is wondering in a breathless way, you know, will he play or not? You know, will he quit? Will he go on? You know, so it's real scenes with the full suspense about the music. How will he play? Will he win? Will he lose? You know, will he be successful or is it a disaster? So the suspense is coming from the music itself, but it's coming from the idea of my friend Kamil Velkovsky, who was telling the story of this musician coming back to have these concertos, you know. So it's really at the birth of the script writing, we had this idea of the music. Finishing the film today, and while the film is screened here in San Sebastian, I think that the music is, the fact that the music is, all the film is happening in the world of music is good, you know, because the film from time to time is very melodramatic or very sad or melancholic about the past, as you were saying, etc. And music soothes the pain, you know, it calms down the pain, you know, and so the suffering, you know. Yes, life is hard, but you have to enjoy it. Whatever happens, you know, and music can teach you that, you know, how to appreciate life, the pure happening of life, you know, even if life is sometimes tough to experience.
How did you get Charlotte Rampling and how was working with her?
It was beyond words. Beyond words. She's a genius. She's incredibly funny. She has this English sense of humor. She's really hilarious, which is a thing that no one is never saying, you know, about Charlotte. About Charlotte, she's really hilarious. The first time I met her, she was a little like that, you know. She was saying, "What is this script about?" You know, I didn't get it. So I started, you know, it's just like when you are paying a joke and the people don't understand the pun in your joke, you know, so it's awfully embarrassing. So I have to tell her, you know, "I think my film is okay because of this and that." It's true. I was so shy. He said, "No, no, speak frankly, you know." And so after that, she said, "Okay, I'll do the film." And one day she sent me the most beautiful letter I ever got from an actress. She told me, oh, I read the new version, the new draft. You know, the film is fantastic, you know, but I have a serious problem with the scene 62. I said, what problem is it? You know, and she said, yeah, because, you know, I won't change one line of the script. I'm not that kind of actress who are changing their dialogues. I want to respect the dialogues entirely, you know, but in the scene 62, Elena is saying, I'm afraid. And I am Elena, and I've never been afraid. So how do we do? And so we met together to try to find a solution, you know, how to act that scene, you know, and this bravery and this pride of Charlotte saying, I am Elena, it was the most beautiful gift I ever got from an actress.
How much would you say do your actors and actresses bring to the role? Is the character already perfectly in the book, or do they improvise and bring something own?
First of all, we start with the reading of the script, you know, together, you know, but not together, not all the actors together, but one by one, you know. And I'm reading and playing all the parts, you know, reading the text with them, you know, saying, may I try to act the part, you know, could you take the part back, etc. So we exchanged our parts, etc. And I asked them to break the lines, you know, and say, use your own words, you know, just improvise, you break it, you know. I don't want to have something nice. I want to have something lively, suffering, funny, bizarre, odd, something which would be yours and not mine, you know. And so I authorized them, you know, to break my lines, which sometimes are too clever or too nice, you know, in order to bring some life in it, you know, and that's what they did, you know, and it was a blessing.
Past love and lost love or rekindled love are recurring themes in mm-hmm. your film. Yeah. Would you like to explore on that?
I could say one thing which is very important for me is that usually in the ancient times, in the 40s or 30s, we are seeing women's films. You know, it was films about love, you know, in the American Hollywood cinema. You know, and it was sort of a despise about love, you know, saying, no, you have men's films, the real films, the westerns, and, you know, the action movies, you know, and you have women's films, you know, melodramas, you know. My perspective about that is that in my experience of life is that love is a way of understanding and exploring the world. It's a way, it's as secret and as interesting as philosophy. You know, to be in love, it's a way of discovering someone else, a new universe, a new world, you know, new perspective, you know, to understand the world, you know, in that dimension that I'm trying to explore. You know, and I think that, you know, in this love story, impossible love, you know, because it's impossible, you know, between Claude and Mathias, you know, because it wouldn't be good, you know, for them to stay together, you know, in so many ways, you know. So it's an impossible love, just like, you know, in the wonderful Age of Innocence, the Scorsese movie, you know, which is a period piece from Edith Wharton, you know, and for them, they are trapped into the past, and they will be faithful to their love, but they will move on. They will say, okay, let's get rid of the past. And I think that's something that I wanted to bring to the audience, is to say, don't be trapped into the past, just move and start to love the present time, you know. And that's the end of the movie, with Hippolyte Girardot and François Civil escaping. You know, we all have to escape to the past, just to fall in love with the present.
How hard is it for you to work together on screenplays? Is it easy, or is it always a struggle?
I never worked on a script alone by myself, you know, because I'm bored, you know, because cinema is for an audience. So I need to have an audience, you know, I need to have a partner, because I'm not brilliant enough, you know, to write by myself. But here, this experience on that film is really a moment very important in my life as an artist, you know, because the collaboration with Carmen Volkowski was really something special, you know. Perhaps is it because Carmen is coming from the American writing? So it's a technique which is totally different from the French writing, you know, it's much more active, you know. Carmen was always bringing punchlines, jokes, surprise, you know, suspense, you know, and he was bringing that all the time. So it was an absolute pleasure to work together. It was a partnership. It's the first time that I'm experiencing such a partnership in my writing process.
The film has a very special mood and warm lighting, a specific color palette that almost looks like candlelight. How did you create that, and what did you inspire to do that?
You know, about the lights, we knew with Paul Guillaume that we would film during the winter, and we wanted to have the sun in winter, you know, when the sun is very low, you know, on the horizon, you know. And so these lights are so, it's like a magical, you know, it's magic, you know, and the film is starting with the magic, you know, when Matthias is hanging around in the park and suddenly he can see a kid and it's magic, you know, because it's the sun of the winter, you know, and it's a thing which was very, very precious to me. But also perhaps is it because the storytelling was in a way classic? I wanted, you know, to add another dimension. So I proposed to Paul and I said, okay, we won't rent a tripod. We won't rent a dolly. We won't rent a tracking. We will just do everything handheld, you know. So there is a certain brutality in the fact of filming with the lighting, which are so soft and gentle and magic, you know, and the physicality of the camera is in sort of contrast with the lighting, which is so soft and protecting.
Do you like the word melodrama for your films and embrace it, or do you resent it?
No, I embrace it. I embrace it. You know, with this condition is that this melodrama is also haunted with ghosts, ghosts of the past. And as I was saying, we have to get rid of these ghosts, you know. And so the film is not just a melodrama. It's also a mystery film, you know, and these two dimensions, you can't split one dimension from the other one. You have the film is these two dimensions together. That's why this film came, you know, from a collaboration with Kamen, you know. It's what brought Kamen and what I brought, which are hand in hand, you know, hand to hand, trying to guide the audience until the last scene.
So you already mentioned that you listen in on the audience, how they react. What would you hope for the audience to take away from the film?
Love the present. But, you know, strangely enough, you know, perhaps it's because it's in my temper, in my way of seeing things, you know, I hope stupidly one thing while the film is happening right now is I hope that they will laugh. I know it's a melodrama, you know, but I hope that here and there they will laugh, you know, because each time that I can see something comical, let's say Charlie Chaplin falling on the floor, on the ground, I think it's awfully sad. You know, and people laugh in the theater, and I think it's sad. Look, the little man, you know, he just fall down. You know, perhaps his bottom, you know, he hurt his bottom. So, you know, I have empathy for him and pity for him. I pity him. And each time I can see serious characters, I'm laughing, you know, because life is so silly, you know. And, you know, thinking about the character of Max, you know, who is that sort of angel, the agent of Matthias, the pianist. He has an agent, a musical agent, you know, taking care of him. And so I hope that they will laugh with the jokes of Max, because I think they are hilarious. So right now, I hope that they will be sad and that they will laugh, you know, because that's my way of seeing the life, you know, around me.
Now that you go from one festival to the other, do you already have a favorite festival?
A favorite festival? Here it's very special, you know, because the audience is special. You know, each one of them is very different. You know, Cannes is the center of the world of cinema, you know, but the audience is less warm than in San Sebastian. It's not a real audience. It's a business. It's a business to be there. It's very good to do some business, you know, but it's different, you know. Toronto is so important, you know, because for the American market, it's the key. It's the door that you have to open, you know, to enter into the American market. San Sebastian is warm. Venice is old-fashioned, and Venice is changing all the time, and we don't know exactly, etc. One of the best film festivals in the world is the New York Film Festival, you know, which is so experimental and so interesting, you know, because also I love the theater. All of them have their charm, you know, really all of them.
And while you're here, do you also have time to watch a few films, or does it not?
No, I won't have the time, you know, because I'm leaving so early tomorrow morning. I still don't know how I will do to wake up tomorrow morning at 4 a.m.
What does a story need for you to be interesting enough to want to make a film out of it?
Ambiguity. You know, I don't like when things are just saying who is the good guy, the bad guy, etc. What I love, you know, I love her, I don't love him, etc. What I love is when life is ambiguous, you know, and I love when the stories are ambiguous.
Now that you work with such a great actress as Charlotte Rampling, mm-hmm. Who are the other great actors and actresses you would love to work with?
So many of them, too many of them, you know. Have you seen, you know, the Joachim Trier movie? You know, I mean, she blew my mind, you know. She's not the same age than Charlotte Rampling, but she's great. I can assure you that she's great. I'm mentioning this film, you know, because I just saw Joachim Trier, you know, in the hotel where I'm staying here in San Sebastian, and we were speaking about Elle Fanning and the wonderful Renata. Renata is a movie star, an absolute movie star, you know. I saw Julie, you know, I love Julie so much, you know. So there are so many actresses, you know. You don't have that many actors who are interesting. you know, in France, you know, François being one of them, François being one of the main movie stars, actors, you know, because there is, it's strange, you know, you're asking me this question and my answer will be too obscure, you know, but I think that cinema has been invented to be contemporary with the fact that women conquer themselves through the film. You know, when you see, you know, who cares about the director? What you go and see is a Marilyn Monroe movie. You know, what you go and see is a Greta Garbo movie. And each one of these great Louis Brooks movie, you know, all these women took the films, empowered the film and say, okay, this is who am I? You know, who I am. You know, I'm a woman. I'm this kind of woman. And each one of these great actresses, and Charlotte Rampling being one of them, say, okay, this is my definition of, you know, my womanhood and my way of being a woman. And I think the cinema had this gift of being contemporary to the woman's liberation.
So would you say that you're more like what in the past was called a woman's director, like George Cukor or Douglas Sirk?
Yeah, George Cukor and Douglas Sirk, the both of them directed wonderful melodramas, but they let the woman, you know, it wouldn't make sense to me to say this belong to, you know, Cukor and this belong to the actress playing in the Cukor, you know, to Judy Garland. No. It's a Judy Garland movie. It's a Cukor's movie too, but it's a Judy Garland's movie, you know, because Judy Garland is speaking about her relationship with alcohol, about, you know, the hope, the despair, the her way of being a singer and an actress in the same time, etc. So it's a Cukor's movie, but it's also a Judy Garland's movie, you know, and that's a statement which is very important for me.
At the moment, is there already a new project that you're working on and like to talk about?
Yeah, but I won't talk about, you know, but I think with Kamen, I collaborate to the best script I ever wrote. It's a comedy. It's in France with American expats. I can tell you the title, which is great. And the title, I didn't find it. Kamen for, you know, my English, you can hear it. It's broken, you know, but Kamen found a great title, The Thing That Hurts. And it's a bittersweet comedy. It's really lovely and hilarious.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much,
Arnaud Despechin. Thank you. The pleasure was for me.